You say you did it. I say you didn't. You say you worked hard. I say so did I. You say you worked hard. I say so did I. I say you got lucky. You say I didn't try. So you say it all worked. I say not for me. You say I didn't try. I say you just don't see why. You say I didn't try. I ask, can you cry? You ask, why should I? I ask as I sigh. Why can't you see it? If we exist as I, too few will make it if we are only I. Folks, that's the whole question in life is how much do we care about others and how much do we sacrifice a little bit to make our world a better place? We're going to talk about all kinds of issues on this show. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY, and I'm your host, Alan Jennings. That would be me. This is election season. You're getting pelted from every direction, from the top of the federal government to state representative and attorney general. They come at you from television to Facebook, from newspaper to mailers. They come at you by phone and even to your front door, and here we are coming at you from radio. I recognize that NPR listeners are the smartest radio listeners, but I have to tell you, my faith in the American voter has been seriously diminished this year. If you check off all the things that have toppled prior presidential candidates, financial corruption, retribution on whistleblowers, women, lying, cheating on your tax return, conflicts of interest, you can check off every single one of them, and yet somehow the man at the top is still in the race. It'll be interesting to see how kind of trumped up this election will be. And one has to believe that a lot of people are confused about how the president got the virus when it's supposedly a hoax. People in the red states think that we should all have the right to be too cool or too free to have to do what the government says. I'm wondering if there are enough people thumbing their noses at the warnings to turn some of the red states purple or even blue. During the election season, I try to bring you interesting political content and get extra Lehigh Valley Discourse slots to do election-oriented stuff. And last time we did a pretty neat congressional forum. We don't have that this time. Lisa Scheller's campaign didn't respond to several attempts to connect her, but I also got a decline from Susan Wild. I'm not sure what the issue was there. She did promise to do the show after the election. Maybe the Republican candidates think I'll be one-sided in favoring those whose political views are similar to mine. But I need to make it very clear, as the executive director of the Community Action Committee of the Lehigh Valley, and for that matter, WDIY, they're both nonprofit organizations, and we cannot be partisan. We have to be fair, and I try very hard, despite my liberal politics, to not speak on behalf of the Democratic Party. So we've got today two legislative seats that are open in the Lehigh Valley. There are two seats that are, there is no incumbent running because of retirements. And one is in the 138, which is the district formerly represented by Marsha Hahn, who's retiring. My guest this evening, Tara Zirinsky, who's running for state legislature in Northampton County, who I met at a Black Lives Matter demonstration. Tara, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Let's start with the easy stuff. What qualifies you to be the person representing the 138th district in Harrisburg?
Well, I am already a Northampton County councilwoman, so I have some experience legislating, at least at the local level. Beyond that, I'm like everybody else, and I think that when you ask for a representative, you need a representative who's going to represent the people, and that would be me. I'm a single mom. I have three jobs. I'm stringing my paychecks together. I've had times where I've had health care, where I haven't had health care. I'm paying my student loans. I have another kid in college. I have one in the Marines, and my other son is studying at home in this virtual
crazy hybrid world.
Yeah. So I am like everybody else. I'm concerned about our state. I'm concerned about our environment. And I'm concerned about our elections. So I'm motivated and compelled to run because I really want to make a change.
Well, as a mom and singularly responsible for your child's education, I don't know how single moms are doing it. I mean, you've got these pandemic pods. My daughter has one going. And, you know, these are college-educated women, middle to upper middle class, know what they're doing, know how to do it. And they struggle mightily with both parents in the household. How are you doing the homeschool part of the education that you have to do these days? Is that a crunch, or how are you doing it?
I have to tell you, it's a struggle.
I'm sure.
I'm not going to lie. You know, my son just entered sixth grade, and the transition between elementary school and middle school is hard enough without all this COVID stuff. It's how do you make friends? How do you socialize?
Now 12 to 14 has got to be the worst 2 years of your life.
It really is. And, you know, kids change and at this age too. So there's a lot of other physical and emotional things going on that you're dealing with while they're changing. And I can't say that it's easy. Sometimes it's a struggle to get my son to log on in the morning and to do his homework. There's a lot of things that are missed, and through some of it's his fault. You know, some of it's my fault. But navigating the system, I'm an online professor, so I understand the online platforms. But the platform that they're using, the Schoology, and then there's other things that you have to navigate to within the framework of the online platform. And every time you have to click away from where you are or upload something or screenshot something, it complicates the whole thing. We've missed assignments. We were up late Friday night trying to get assignments in until, you know, you have to get them in by the end of the day or mid-semester where you're going to get one of those notices. But we're doing it.
Meanwhile,
you know, we're making the best.
Three jobs.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm sympathetic. Let me ask you, you know, my perspective on Harrisburg is that it's fundamentally a corrupt place. You know, they've got the rules worked out that maybe 10 people call all the shots out there. You've got the majority leader, the minority leader in each caucus. You've got, you know, the whip, the president pro tem, the speaker of the house, and a committee chair from time to time, you know, depending on the legislation. Why would you want to walk into that place and deal with that kind of fundamentally anti-democratic, really almost corrupt operation? This might be needs to be a therapy session. I mean,
it probably could be a therapy session, and maybe that's why I want to go into this, because I've been trained in pastoral counseling and theology, and I worked in a church. I understand some of the dysfunctions that are within, you know, microcosms in different systems. They're just representative of everything else in the world that we see in our society. And although we see corruption at the state level in the legislature, we see corruption outside in every aspect of our world. Mm-hmm. You know, you have people who think, and I always find this interesting, people who think that you're smart because you've outsmarted the tax code.
Yeah.
You know, or you're smart because you know how to make lots of profits in business, but it's at the expense of your workers. Right. You know, there has to be
some... Or the environment.
Or the environment. Yeah, because that's really big for me too. We have to understand that there's consequences to every decision that we make, but at the core of it, we have to value people over profit, people over any kind of money or outcome that will happen to enrich ourselves. And for me, this is kind of like, I tell people, you know, after I went to seminary, I thought I was going to become a minister, but instead I decided to become a politician because it's really not that different. It is a ministry in itself.
From my tradition, which is the Calvinist tradition, you know, there was reading the Bible. I mean, reading the newspaper is just as important as reading the Bible. And, you know, going to city council meetings are just as important as going to church, and because there's no difference between the two. On the faith issue for a moment, how is it that the conservatives find a place in the Bible the same way the liberals do? I mean, isn't that, I've never been able to understand that.
I don't know if we're reading the same Bible.
Yeah.
Like when people talk to me about Jesus, I wrote my master's thesis on Jesus as the master teacher. Because I felt like...
He was a rabbi, right?
Yeah.
And that's a teacher.
He healed the sick. He fed the poor. He brought the marginalized into the fold of society.
Yeah.
And he tried to overthrow the tables at the market,
right.
You know, because money wasn't important.
Yep.
It was people who are important and how you treat them and how you live your lives. And that's what society is supposed to do, is help us all be productive within society. There's a social contract that we all kind of agree to. You know, you put in your time, you get something back. It's not, the social contract can't be one-sided. And right now, I really feel like it is. people are putting in 60, 70 hours a week, putting in their whole lives to work, and they're not getting much out of it.
They're not getting anywhere.
No. Yeah. People are losing their homes in their elder years because they're paying high property taxes.
Yeah.
That can't be right.
Yeah, I always thought of Jesus basically as a revolutionary, and I've never understood how the left got their faith taken from them by the right. I just never understood how they pulled that off, you know, because I think Jesus came from the left, not the right. I don't know how you look at it any other way.
I think it comes when you look at the apocalyptic literature, and Jesus comes back as sort of like a warrior.
Angry,
yeah.
Name taker.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I see people, I mean, even when I talk to them now, they think we're in the end times, that we're preparing for it right now.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, you can induce that, but let's try not to.
Let's
How about
not.
That?
Yeah, exactly.
Let's try something else.
Now, that leads us to stewardship and the question. You're a big environmental advocate, and I am too. I'm a bird watcher, and my politics certainly make me a very, very green-oriented person. You recently spoke at a waste management hearing at Plainfield Township had on the waste management's desire or need, as they say, to expand their landfill in Plainfield Township. That company gives a fair amount of money to the nonprofits in the area. They've got a couple hundred jobs. They're saying that if they have to shut down the landfill, they're going to be gone and the Slate Belt will be out, the revenue, the tax base, and so on. And you were there speaking out pretty aggressively, as I know you to do, and was just wondering, and this is an age-old challenge, and is how does economic development get reconciled with the need for profits? And so how do you do that?
Well, they don't have to be antagonistic to each other. And when we frame the discussion, we often put them on opposite sides as if they don't mean anything. You know, we need clean air. We need clean water. We have a landfill because we have a waste issue. We're putting things in our waste now that pile up and accumulate. That can't be a good thing. I think we all have seen WALL-E, right? The Disney movie.
The movie.
Yeah. I mean, we have so many landfills around us. If we keep expanding, that's not really a solution. To me, that's the same solution as when I tell my kid to clean his room and he shoves everything under the bed. That's not the solution.
You mean moms have figured that one out, huh?
I have. I'm really good at that. But we can't keep doing that. We have to come up with other things. Recycling is a huge issue for me. And
yeah,
I don't think it has
China's
to be.
China's not taking our recycling.
China's
anymore.
Not taking it. No one in Asia takes it. No one wants our garbage.
Right.
Right?
Makes sense.
So what we have to do is try to figure out how can we make our garbage recyclable, more recyclable? How can we actually recycle instead of using the single stream? How can we incentivize recycling? And how can we create jobs with recycling?
Right.
How can we incentivize companies and corporations to use materials that are biodegradable? Or how can we incentivize them to reclaim their products after they've reached the life of their use? You know, there's a program called TerraCycle. Well, they'll actually mail you an envelope or a box, and you can send your stuff back. They'll recycle your glassware, your plastic, and things like that. But the company has to be a participant. Now, we can have ideas like that, but we have to implement them. We're kind of stuck in a pattern where we think that when corporations do good things for the community, that we owe them. But that is somewhat true. But at the same time, the corporations have to be mindful that the people living in those areas need clean water, clean
right.
air, and they need roadways that aren't littered with trucks and truck traffic, because that comes out of your taxes too. All these things have consequences. We have to look at the big picture, and we have to think of things systemically, not just one part taking a look at it at one time. We have to look at the whole entire system.
You're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY, local NPR radio. I'm Alan Jennings, your host. My guest this evening right now is Tara Zirinsky, who's running for state legislature in Northampton County. The seat occupied by Marsha Hahn for a number of years, who is retiring, and the seat is open up for grabs. Stick with us. Tara's going to be back on the other side of the break, and we'll see you in a minute.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100, extension 6, or WDIY.org.
Celtic Fair, a celebration of Celtic music and culture, from its roots in Ireland, Scotland, Wales, Galicia, and Brittany, to its branches in Australia, Cape Breton, Canada, Chicago, New York, Philadelphia, and the Lehigh Valley. Bringing you music, interviews, and a weekly culture calendar every Thursday from 7 to 9 on WDIY.
Okay, glad you're back. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY. I'm Alan Jennings, your host. My guest is Tara Zerinsky. Tara is a Northampton County Councilwoman. I've seen her in action. I've seen her at a demonstration for Black Lives Matter. And Tara, you impressed the hell out of me. I was impressed with your anger. I was impressed with your articulation of the issues. I was impressed with where you were on the issues. And I'm just wondering if we can talk race for a minute. I don't understand racism. I just don't understand it. What does your skin color have to do with anything? Why don't we hate you because your hair is auburn, or that you wear glasses, or whatever? I mean, why do we hate people for the color of skin? So the question is, why is there racism in our society? Where does this come from?
Well, I think I could write a dissertation on that one.
Well, because the follow-up question is, what can a state legislator do about it?
Yeah. So I think racism comes from different communities being pit against each other. I mean, you know that racism is born out of slavery and this idea that one race is more
deserving
of another. And that's not necessarily true, obviously. I mean, there's a lot of reasons why people justify and rationalize racism. But at the end of the day, we're all human beings and we are part of the human race. We're humanity and we should be striving to be a better humanity, a more inclusive humanity, but we're not. And I think a lot of times it comes because there's this idea of privilege. And when people don't feel that privilege, they feel that maybe somebody of color actually has more privilege than them, that's a rubbing point for them. Mm-hmm. It's another source of anger. Who do you think you are? Right. Why do you need this? And what can a legislature do?
Well, especially you represent a district that is very white.
Very white, yeah.
So what can you do? What will anybody want you to do in your district?
Well, I think there are a number of people who have aligned themselves with the Black Lives Matter community and that movement. And I think that it's important to address race even in white communities, because we have to articulate how it is that we can be allies. And we have to also understand how it is that we might participate in racism and we might not even know it. You know, there's implicit bias and there's ways that people act that they might not even be conscious of. So part of that is being a leader in the community, is drawing that out, having conversations, having tough conversations. We know right now that the Black Lives Matter movement is in almost direct opposition to the police. As a leader, we need to address that because it's obvious that we still need policing. We still need a police force.
I think the defund the police slogan is just the worst thing I've heard in decades.
Well, it's a brand and a marketing.
It's a stupid
but
statement.
It's misrepresented because it's not about necessarily getting rid of the police and abolishing the police, because without them, there would be anarchy.
That's why slogans are so important, and we do such a lousy job on our side of the political equation with the sloganeering.
We do. We do. Republicans are great at marketing, and
right. It should be upgrade the police or fix the police or you know, but defund the police? I don't get that.
Yeah. Basically, what we're trying to do is reform the police.
Right.
Right now you have a system where police officers who are, you know, the bad cops, the bad apples, they can go from one branch to another seamlessly, and their record doesn't necessarily follow them. So that's a problem. You know, we can't hide and we can't rationalize people who go into industries like this or fields like this where they have authority and power and a gun.
Yeah.
You know, and they abuse that power. We have to be mindful that we can't allow people to abuse their power or authority. And so how do we have conversations about that without alienating one side?
Right.
Because we don't want to. we definitely need police. And I've talked to individual police officers about this because I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. Because I know that we still need police in our areas. I mean, just to even patrol. When you have a problem at your house, you want to know that the cops are going to come.
Right.
But you want to know that they're the best trained cops, and you also want to know that they're the best trained in for what you need them for.
Right.
So if we can retrain police officers and specialize parts of the force, that would be a much better system. And it would meet the needs of society better and for our areas. So legislatively, we can make sure that we reform that. There is legislation now that they are fighting in Harrisburg in concern to the FOP, which...
Fraternal Order of Police, the police union.
Yes, the police union, which does have the power to protect officers by just its existence. Yeah. That's what it's made
for. They even
for.
Defended the guy that killed George Floyd. I mean, that's amazing.
Because that's what they're there for.
Amazing.
So if that's what they're there for, then that system's not working anymore. And then we have to address that in ways that we can. It doesn't mean that police shouldn't be protected, you know, because they do go out and do a really difficult job. And right. They have to make decisions on the job that no one else necessarily wants to make.
You're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. My guest is Tara Zirinsky. If you're wondering where her opponent is, she did not respond to repeated attempts to reach her and offer her an opportunity to talk with Tara tonight about these issues. So you get Tara Zirinsky, because I'm not going to punish her for her opponent declining the opportunity. So you're getting Tara Zirinsky and only Tara Zirinsky, and we're okay with that because we were very fair in giving the other candidate an opportunity. What do you think are the three most important issues that your constituents would tell you? I mean, because I'm sure you've done door-to-door, you're listening to people. I see a lot of Trump signs up in that area. And so I'm curious, you know, what do you think those constituents you're going to represent in Harrisburg would tell you are the three most important issues to mm-hmm. them?
Well, I just want to clarify, too, that we're not going door to door. We're doing what's called lit dropping. I think it might be irresponsible to go and try to draw somebody out of their house by knocking on their door. So I haven't really done that. If I see somebody outside, I approach them and I say, hey, you know, I always wear a mask. I mm-hmm. always, you know, approach them and say, can I give you a piece of literature? You know, I'm Tara Zirinsky. I just want to have a conversation. I can leave it here or there. I want to make sure that people are safe and mm-hmm. that people are also comfortable. I mean, that goes both ways. Sometimes people, you know, tell you to take your mask off and what are you doing? But that has calmed down a lot. So the three issues that I think are most important in our area are for tax reform. People want real tax reform. There's a lot of elderly people, seniors in our community, who are in jeopardy of losing their homes because at the end of their life, they're on a fixed income. And they're limited in how they can actually expand their income. You know, it right. doesn't cut it. Right. You know, when you get that $6,000, $7,000 tax bill, even a $3,000 tax bill is breaks sure. some people. So they're very concerned about that. The other thing is people are very concerned about healthcare and prescription drug prices. I know that for me personally, my mom is diabetic. It's a chronic illness, disease. You're never going to get rid of it. You have life-saving medication that you have to get every month. Right. For her, even on Medicare, it's $400 a month. And wow. when you're on a fixed income, that's hard. When Medicare, she told me the other day that she was in the donut hole. And I'm like, what does that mean? You know, you're in the donut hole. It's in this area where you're kind of like approaching the end of the year and the prices go up because you've used most of your insurance coverage. And I was like, oh, my gosh. So now it's like $600 or $800 a month.
Wow.
And I'm like, when you have a jump in cost like that, it's a significant dent
traumatic.
In your yes
yeah.
yeah and especially when you have to like during COVID there was rationing of insulin. You can't ration your medication. You have to take it as prescribed, and that's difficult. I know that there's lots of seniors in our community that are probably facing the same issues, and so we need control over prescription drug prices, and we also need a healthcare that's going to work for everybody, not just access to healthcare, not just this idea of affordable healthcare, but healthcare for all. And I think we're approaching that time when people are just tired of having their health care follow their employment because
it never made sense in the first place. I mean, what does employment have to do with your need for health care? I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
Well, it causes so many gaps. I mean, I was in that gap at one point in time where I was in between jobs and you're in that 6-month grace period where you don't have insurance, mm-hmm. but you don't have COBRA. And even if you did have COBRA, you probably couldn't afford it.
Right.
You know, so... I had a kidney infection, and I was trying to, you know, treat myself with cranberry juice. Like, honestly, Tara, right. What were you thinking? Yeah. But I got to the point where I had to go to the doctor, and I did not want to be hospitalized. I begged for them to give me antibiotics and to let me go home. And I said, I will hydrate myself. I will make sure that I'm okay, but I cannot afford to go to the hospital. Oh. I cannot afford an ambulance ride. You know, these are decisions.
That's just not right. And what it requires is employers to compete with each other by seeing who can screw their employees out of their health insurance better. You know what I mean? I mean, because that's one of the things that makes it, because healthcare costs are a massive part of an expense for a company.
Well, that's part of this idea of a profit-driven model where profit is everything. So now you just start thinking about, well, if my employee doesn't work 30 hours, then I don't have to supply healthcare. And that's how you get a bunch of people on a lot of different part-time jobs, stringing their paychecks together, mm-hmm. because it's very difficult to get a full-time job because you have to pay benefits.
They take the profits, we take the blame. So that was two of the three.
Yes. And so third one is education. Yeah, everybody's very concerned about education. Right now with COVID, obviously, everybody's concerned that the kids are going to be a year behind. How are they going to ever recover? And how are our schools ever going to recover? We have a lot of different issues in our school systems now. It's not just with COVID. It's the funding of the schools. And that's always tied to property taxes. It shouldn't be. But what happens is when the budget, Corbett cut the budget by over $1 billion. So trying to make up $1 billion into a budget while there is escalating costs is kind of
like a COVID crisis.
And a COVID crisis is really difficult. So the burden then falls onto municipalities and onto property taxes to help fund public schools. And we can't have that.
Not funded, primarily funded, right?
Yes. Yes. So we need to fix the budget at the state level and make sure that schools are fairly and fully funded.
What impresses me these days about the public school superintendents is they all seem to get the disparity issue between the urban school districts and the suburban school mm-hmm. districts. What they'll say is, don't take money from us to give it to the poorer school districts, but we would be very supportive of putting more money into the system and for all of that money to go to confront the challenges of the urban school districts. So you as a suburban or even rural elected official are going to end up, you know, having to deal with this issue, and you're going to have your voters going to be appalled that you think it'd be okay to put more money in Philadelphia or Allentown when they want it in Penn Argyle and Bangor, right?
Well, I think at the end of the day, what we're looking at is we have to educate our future workforce and also give opportunities to everybody in Pennsylvania so that people can sustain themselves. You know, people have this idea that we want everybody to pull themselves up by their bootstraps. Well, if you don't have any boots, you got nothing to pull up,
right.
You know?
Yep.
So we need to make it a level playing field for everybody so that the opportunities are fair. And that means not just urban and rural, but suburban too. It needs to be fairly funded.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I want to do when I get there, is make sure that everybody has what they need.
You are listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY. You've been listening to Tara Zirinsky, who is a candidate for the state legislative district at 138th. And we didn't have her opponent because her opponent didn't respond to repeated attempts to reach her, to invite her. So, Tara, I want to give you about a minute to give us, you know, your pitch. Why vote for Tara Zirinsky?
Well, obviously, I think I'm the best person for the job or I wouldn't be running. I'm a caring and compassionate individual who wants to do the best for the community. I have experience and leadership behind me. And I think and I know that when I go, I will listen to the voters. I will listen to the constituents in my district. And I will reach out to them and make sure that they are brought into the fold and that they understand that this is a new way that we're going to start thinking about things. The social contract is real. I'm going to make sure that the state fulfills its end.
Tara Zirinsky, thanks for coming on the show. Good luck to you. November 4th is just a few weeks away. Gets more and more kind of scary as every day, I'm sure. And so, but best of luck to you.
Thank you. And I want everybody to know that they should go out on November 3rd and vote. If you can vote by mail, there are ballot drop boxes in various areas. Go to the election board and look them up. There's probably one near you. I know there's one on Emmerich Boulevard, and there's one at the courthouse. Make sure you vote. Make sure your voice is heard.
Tara Zirinsky, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Stick with us. We're going to take a quick break. I've got Kevin Branco, who is the Democratic candidate for the 131st, coming right up. Stick with us.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and it may be tax deductible. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
Galactic Travels brings you hour-long soundscapes of electronic, ambient, and space music. The special focus for December is Matt Borge. That's Thursday night at 11, right here on WDIY Allentown, 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. By day, night, weekends, my whole life, I'm the executive director of the Community Action Committee of the Lehigh Valley. Once a month, WDIY gives me the opportunity to interview people for public affairs issues. My work is mostly oriented towards poverty and community development issues, but I'm interested in just about everything you, the listeners of NPR and WDIY, are. We just got finished talking to Tara Zirinsky, and not her opponent. And we're going to now talk to Kevin Branco, and not his opponent. And the reason in both cases is because neither of their opponents returned my phone calls and my emails or responded to my emails. So please do not take this as anything in a partisan way, that you're not hearing the Republican. You're not hearing the Republican because they apparently declined to let you hear them. So you're going to have to get their views from some other forum. These two seats are of importance is because they are two seats that are open seats in the Lehigh Valley for the Pennsylvania House of Representatives. In Kevin's case, it is Justin Simmons who has left his seat in the 131st. So, to Kevin Branco, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Let's start with the softball question. Why? Why do you want to go to the legislature? Why do you think people should vote for you for that purpose?
So I guess to answer that one, you should know a little bit about me. I'm a business owner. I own a gym in Hellertown. For the past 10 years, I've been working or owning the gym, and I have people from all walks of life coming in. Every day, I have millionaires and people on public assistance. I have people that drive $300,000 cars. I have people that drive, you know, $100 cars. And everybody has the same basic want out of their government, but they're not getting it. Everybody has the same need for better infrastructure, better education, or more affordable healthcare. And everybody has the same complaints, but we're not seeing it. So eventually, I looked at it and I said, you know, I tell my clients, my personal training clients, if you don't like it, fix it. So I decided to take my own advice, and I didn't like what I was seeing, so I decided to step up and fix it.
That's cool. So, you know, you're probably getting a hell of an education doing this. One of the things I wanted to ask you about was, and this is unique, I don't watch a lot of television. I watch MSNBC at night because Rachel Maddow and Chris Hayes, and they're very good at really firing me up and making me mad as hell. And I've been seeing some third-party ads that don't mention you, but go pretty aggressively after your opponent. And they're actually, I think, very effective ads. Do you have any control? I mean, how's that relationship developed? Because they obviously have an interest in not electing her.
So you're correct. Those are out there. That's what they call independent expenditures. So one thing that I've learned in the campaign world, something that people talk about, but nobody really firmly knows about, you know, is if a group wants to support your campaign, they can either give you a check, you know, a contribution to that you can use for your campaign as you see fit, or they can do something on their own behalf. If they do something on their own behalf, that's an independent expenditure. I cannot know about that. My campaign, nobody in my campaign.
No coordination?
Nothing.
Of the message or the agenda?
Nothing. The ads that you are talking about, I didn't know about until I saw them on TV.
Huh.
I've also received mail that I didn't know about until I saw them in my mailbox, or friends and family would send me pictures of them. And they could be anything. They could be pro me. They could be anti my opponent. It's their complete prerogative. It's definitely an interesting dynamic in the campaign world that, you know, things can come out about me or for me or against me, and the candidates have no control over it.
Yeah, I know. It's maddening, isn't it? And the ability you have of getting the word to people that you didn't endorse that or you did is expensive.
Absolutely.
How much do you plan on spending in this campaign?
This campaign is going to be an expensive race.
Yeah, because open seats are pretty rare.
Exactly. Originally, we had a budget that was pretty slim, but we have accelerated to one of the top races in the state.
Wow.
So if not the top race, simply because it is a district that can be flipped. It hasn't been held by a Democrat in 30 years.
And has it been that long?
Yeah. Almost 30 years. I think it's just under.
Because before Justin Simmons was Karen...
Beyer, correct.
Right, who was a friend. Republican, but a very good friend of mine.
She's a good person.
Yeah, before her, I think it was Paul McHale, wasn't it?
Yes. Yes, it was.
Yeah.
So, if I remember correctly.
But it should be a Democratic seat, shouldn't it? I mean, isn't it a Democratic... Don't they have a majority of the...
Right now, it is a Republican district.
Number of voters. It has more Republicans than it does Democrats.
Yes, sir.
Oh, okay.
So our district is kind of different than most. We're one of the few districts in the state that actually has three separate counties. Mm. Here's gerrymandering at its finest. When Ms. Beyer was the representative, it included more of Lehigh County. Shortly after she lost her seat, they redistricted and pulled the Democratic strong part of Lehigh County out of it and brought in the northwestern portion of Montgomery County. So now our district goes from the western side of Lower Saucon or Northampton County through Lehigh County down into Montgomery County to like Pennsburg, Red Hill.
I think you might have the richest and the poorest people in that same district, don't you? I mean, you've got parts of Saucon, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you've got, don't you have the Cumberland Gardens part of, you know, of Southwest Allentown? Southeast Allentown?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, so you got the poorest and the wealthiest. How are you going to balance that, those two constituencies? You got one that's hyper attentive to politics. They're paying for politics. And you got another one that isn't paying attention, and the other one's getting really stuck because they're not politically strong. Have you thought about poverty and disparity as an issue for this campaign? Have you talked about that?
Absolutely. Good. So as I started off, reason why I'm running is we all want the same thing. You know, we all want the same goals, but it's how we get there that makes us different, right? So I personally think that education is the key. Access to affordable, quality education is across the board a key to our success as a whole, as a nation, not just our state, not just our district, but as a whole. So, for example, the richest few could benefit from better education, okay? Those business owners out there that are hiring in the hundreds or the thousands of people, right, they would benefit from a better educated workforce.
Right.
The lower end of socioeconomic system, right, they would benefit from a better educational system as far as access and affordability, because then they can bring themselves up through their own initiative. Mm-hmm. You know, I was actually just talking to a friend of mine. This gentleman, we lost contact after high school. He got in trouble with some drugs and whatnot. And now he's clean. He's good to go. And I said, what are you doing now? And he said, he's working for a janitorial service. Mm. I said, okay, well, where from? Where are you going now? You know, and he said that he wants to move up as they hire more people. He'll have more seniority. And I pointed out, I'm like, you can't just do that and expect to move up. I said, you got to do something on your own behalf. And he goes, well, I don't have a GED. I said, okay, get one.
Yeah.
He mentioned that he can't afford it and he doesn't have the time because of his work schedule. So I made a deal with him. I said, listen, I did the research. I found out that Northampton County Community College, I thought GED courses were free. Mm-hmm. They're not. They're all online. I don't know if that's because of pandemic or what, but right now they're all online. And I told him, I said, listen, I will pay for your GED. He can come to my gym every Saturday for an hour or so and study and do the classes he needs to, so he has internet access. The only thing I asked him to do is pass.
That's cool.
But I don't say that as a feather in my hat, but I'm saying that as why is this a barrier? Why is the cost and the access a barrier to someone bettering themselves?
Yeah.
So now he's someone that doesn't make a whole lot of money, right? And he's trying to survive on his own and he's doing the right things, even though he has a bad history. He's doing the right things to really move forward and really be a constructive member of society, but he doesn't have the tools to do so. And our society is letting him down. It shouldn't take an individual like me to find out about it and do it for him. Our government should be there to help people like that kind of come up by their own bootstraps and their own intuition. Mm-hmm. But I feel we're failing our constituents.
Yeah, we're failing in so many different ways. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY, Lehigh Valley Public Radio. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. My guests tonight are the two Democratic candidates for the two open seats in the state legislature in Lehigh Valley. You know, we're getting a lot of big, heavy dose of Trump and all of the stuff going on around Trump. We see very little about state legislative seats in the local news media. And yet, I don't think anybody understands how meaningful the work is that is done by the state legislature. There is an enormous amount of stuff that local governments cannot do because the state legislature won't let them. There are a whole lot of things that the federal government passes on to them to do, which they don't always do that well. And the offset between the costs of what states need to do and the revenue to do it is often short. And we've been looking at billion-dollar deficits almost year after year. And in that environment, we need to do better by public education. So what would you do if you get into the legislature on public education in general? Let me first ask you, where'd you go to high school?
Saucon Valley High School.
Saucon Valley. So you're a Lehigh Valley product?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. So do you have an education agenda? I mean, what have you got in mind?
So education is the keystone of my entire campaign.
Whole campaign. Okay.
So as I mentioned, I think education holds the key for all of our issues. I really do. Over the past two decades, we've seen education funding from K-12 all the way up through our state-funded colleges cut drastically.
Yep.
Governor Wolf has brought it back to the levels of funding levels that we had in 2012. But that's still 8 years of inflation that haven't been accounted for,
yeah.
Let alone, you know, the increase that should have happened anyway. We are 46th in the country. Pennsylvania is 46th in the country for per capita education spending. We are funding most, not all, but most of our state-funded public schools to the tune of 20%. Education is one of the very few things in our state constitution that's lined out, that's provided by the state.
The state is required to spend a certain amount of, you know, or pay for a certain amount of the education costs, and they don't.
Correct. So here we are now only supplying about 20% of an education budget. Now, of course, that varies from school to school, but I know Saucon Valley and Southern Lehigh are both roughly 20%.
Yeah.
So what's happened is because of these lack of funding from the state side of things, we have to make those budget gaps up somewhere. So we see our property taxes keep going up and up and up. And we don't see any real return on that because they're just trying to make ends meet to fit those budget holes. One thing that I would like to see is a severance tax. A severance tax is simply a tax on the amount of product. Correct. That's a tax on the amount of product that's pulled out of the ground. I think that a severance tax, some states provide a severance tax of up to 9%. We're the second largest producer of natural gas in the country, and we're the only ones that don't provide a severance tax. The fracking companies do charge a service fee, an impact fee, I'm sorry, that goes to the local municipalities to fix the roads and bridges that crumble.
That are heavily driven by their trucks and...
Of course.
Yeah, so they can make lots of money. So we pay to make... the
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a great deal, isn't it?
We could use that 9% to fund education or fund social help programs or fund food banks. Or let's go crazy here. And we can even say it might help us balance a budget, which we haven't done in who knows how many years.
Yeah.
But our current administration, legislative administration, refuses to bring that up. Time after time after time, they refuse to bring that up for a vote. And I think it's really time that we move forward on that. The natural gas under our soil. It's nowhere else.
All right. That's Kevin Branco. We're going to take a quick break. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY, Lehigh Valley Public Radio. Stick with us. We got more with Kevin Branco.
WDIY is pleased to partner with the Bethlehem Rotary Club, presenting Taste and Tunes Dessert Edition, an online bakery auction, Sunday, October 4th through the 18th. Bid on desserts for your special occasion. Pick up at your convenience. Event proceeds benefit the Northeast Community Center to continue the work they do with children and families and the philanthropic work of the Bethlehem Rotary Club. For more information, bethlehempa.rotary.org.
For program support on WDIY, we thank the Pocono Cheesecake Factory, now offering curbside pickup of a variety of cheesecake, cookies, pastries, and gourmet treats. For 35 years, helping schools, clubs, and other nonprofit organizations throughout the Lehigh Valley and Northeast Pennsylvania achieve their fundraising goals. The Pocono Cheesecake Factory, since 1985, love at first bite. For more information, PoconoCheesecake.com.
Welcome back. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. By the way, I need to thank James Johnson, who is on the staff here at WDIY, for the good work he's doing and hopefully keeping me from sounding like a complete buffoon. Kevin Branco, not his opponent. His opponent was invited several ways, several times, and I never received a response to that. I didn't think it would be fair to punish Kevin and not give him the opportunity to get his part of the time that he would have been able to take. So we've got 30 minutes with Kevin Branco, candidate in the 131st District of the state legislature. People need to understand that the Pennsylvania state legislature affects your lives at least as much as the federal government does or any local elected body. So we need to be paying more attention to what's going on in the state legislature. Kevin, let's talk about the environment for a minute. Where would you put that in your list of priorities? And what would you do do you consider yourself an environmentalist? Maybe we should start there.
Absolutely, I would. I would put in probably the top three, honestly.
Okay. With public education, which you mentioned.
Absolutely. I would say public education, I would say environment, and I would say social justice would be the top three.
Great.
Probably education first, the other two going back and forth because they both deserve their same amount of time there. As far as environment goes, I grew up running around in the woods and swimming in creeks and streams.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up like literally swinging from branches and trees.
Yeah,
you know?
Me too, man. We're in the same place.
Yeah, how about it? I enjoy that. I grew up doing that. But now I look at my son, who's 5 years old, my oldest, and my one-year-old. They don't have that same opportunity. I look at the streams that I used to swim in, and I look at trash. I look at stuff floating in the streams. The one time I walked past that swimming hole that I used to go to, and it looked like there was a sheen across it from oil. Like, that's not right. And we're in a better part of the state right now, where, as we sit here in Lehigh Valley, that our streams and rivers and our wooded areas are better than most. If you go to different parts of the state, you know, we're allowing fracking within 500 yards of waterways.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to swim as an adult in those waterways. Why would we let our children, let alone drink that water? So I would definitely consider myself an environmentalist and really rank environmental protections pretty high.
You were a political science major at Kutztown?
Yes, sir.
Right? Don't say sir, man. I hate that. I don't deserve that respect. Right, James? Do I deserve to be called sir? I think not.
That's what they call good parenting. I would have been slapped upside the head.
And now I forgot what I was going to say. It was talking about, we were talking about the environment.
Kutztown.
Political science major. Okay. So thanks. There are two kinds of representatives that get sent off to the legislature. One is called a delegate. The other one is called a trustee. I don't know if you had that in any of your courses, but the trustee's mentality is, or the delegate's mentality is, I want to represent my voters as I understand their interests. The trustee is, they elected me to make the right decisions. I'm going to make the decisions that I think are best for my district. Which would you consider yourself? Do you have any thoughts about whether you would be the delegate or the trustee in that equation?
I would say I'm a mix of both. I'm a firm Democrat, but at the same time, I'm a real person. I firmly believe that one party doesn't encompass everybody. Okay, so a lot of my supporters are Republicans. A lot of my donors are Republicans, and I really believe that we need to listen to our constituents on especially the major issues that are really going to affect each and every one of us as human beings. Now, on some of the smaller issues, the more housekeeping issues, I'd really kind of take the role as a trustee, if you will. You know, people elect me for my judgment and my opinion as a person.
I don't understand why we have such trouble with racial justice. I just don't get it. I never have. I talk about it as much as I can. You talked about social justice as an issue of concern to you. I know that Saucon Valley has had some really problematic race-related problems. I heard a graduate who is African-American who is at Bryn Mawr now make a speech at the Hellertown Black Lives Matter demonstration a few months ago. He was extraordinarily impressive. How do you get a school district that is, you know, fairly wealthy, very white, and has some issues to deal with those issues responsibly.
So a little bit about me. My family is interracial. My wife is interracial. So I look at my marriage, and my marriage just a handful of decades ago would not have been even allowed. We've been shunned. So that's why it's so important to me, because I see what my wife goes through. But, you know, you mentioned Saucon Valley. I went to Saucon. I walked those halls. My best friend walking through those halls is black. And we never saw any issues. None of us.
Really?
He never saw any issues. He was never treated differently.
Huh.
Moving forward now, you can't ignore the fact that that is a major undertone from Saucon Valley High School. The young man that really brought it to the forefront, I won't mention his name because he didn't give me authorization to, but he's a member at my gym. He's a friend of mine. Right? There was an A&E special done on him. He brought it to the forefront and really made sure people knew that this was going on. I think one way you start to fix this is you really got to start building minorities into your administration. Make sure there's black and brown people in your teaching staff, in your administration of the school, whether it's coaches or principals or vice principals or superintendents, board members, anything. You got to start building them in, because you can't speak to a population that isn't represented.
Right.
I think that's a start. Other than that, it's hard, because you can't legislate and you can't tell people how to feel. You can't make a law to tell people stop looking at people differently, you know. But what we can do is make sure that there is complete integration across the board to make sure everybody feels comfortable and everybody is represented to a good extent across the board.
You're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY, Lehigh Valley Public Radio. I'm your host, Alan Jennings, run the Community Action Committee of the Lehigh Valley by day, night, and the rest of my life for that matter. But happy to be here on WDIY and run this program every once in a while. I'm going to be back at this mic in 2 weeks with another election-oriented show. That's what I concentrate on at this time of year. So we got Kevin Bronco, and if you're wondering where is his opponent did not respond to repeated attempts to offer her the same opportunity that Kevin is having. I didn't think it was fair to not give Kevin the opportunity because of his opponent's disinterest. So you're getting a full dose of Kevin Bronco. And if you want to learn more about his opponent, you'll have to do that independent research. So, Kevin, the race issue, just to take it one step further, I think the left has really bungled the Black Lives Matter agenda by talking about defunding the police. I just think that is classic, stupid left-wing overreach. And I consider myself to be left-wing and classic, but hopefully not overreaching, although some would say otherwise. What do you think is, what is your position on how to fix, if you will, law enforcement so that it can be respected as it deserves to be? After all, they are heroes. But B, not think that they can just shoot somebody in the back three times in front of their kids sitting in the back seat of the car.
So I don't know if you know this already, but I am endorsed by some of the FOP, which is rare for a Democrat, especially in these times, to be endorsed by FOP.
FOP is the police union.
Correct, Fraternal Order of Police. I agree with you. I think the Black Lives Matter movement is a good, strong movement, and it deserves to be heard. However, I do not agree with the defunding the police. It's an interesting theory, because if you go back, that's a very Republican idea to defund the police, because, you know, it's less government, less spending, more,
right.
You know, control yourself.
They don't want to pay for it.
Exactly. That's a very Republican thing, all the way back to Herbert Hoover told FDR this during the New Deal. I'll go into that later. But the thought of defunding the police, I think it's misguided and misled. I think what we need to be focusing on is putting more money into our after-school programs, so these kids have things to do. They have programs and groups to join after school, so they're not put in a situation that they're out in the streets with idle hands. I definitely think that if we could start establishing those types of programs more, I think we'd be better off. One thing I propose is a grant opportunity. We could use our community development block grant system to have a grant opportunity for nonprofits that are solely there for childhood development. So I'm a youth sports football coach, you know, for 4 and 5 year old flag football players.
Four and 5 year olds?
Yeah.
Playing flag football.
Yeah, it's like herding cats. It's great.
Sure.
But I look at situations like that, and the organization that I coach for, they had a hard time last year because they need to replace lights so their field can be used at night. But none of the typical actors want to step up and do it. PPL used to do it, but they don't anymore. The borough and the school district, neither one wanted to even offer their lift to kind of take some of the expense. The local fire department didn't want to bring their ladder truck out so they could get up there for electrician to fix the lights. So the organization ended up spending $6,500 to replace 60% of the lights in the field. So now you're talking about a nonprofit group that pretty much runs their budget to zero every year because they try and keep their fees low for parents, right? Everybody that helps out, coaches, staff, and all that is all volunteer. But our state government isn't stepping up to at least make those type of improvements sustainable. You know, there's no reason why we can't have a matching grant system. So in this case, youth sports or community theater or community art programs like the Banana Factory, which is just down the road here. Mm-hmm. There's no reason why these things shouldn't have some sort of grant opportunity for development of our kids, our youth, from a state level.
The reason is people don't want to pay for it, really. I mean, that's what it comes down to, you know. I think that, you know, I've always said that if society turns its back on its children, it shouldn't be surprised when 15 or 20 years later, those children turn their backs on society. You know, so investing in those kids is critically important. We choose not to. We run big risks, like lots of expensive prison cells and so on and so forth. When you are out campaigning, are you getting pushback on your politics? It's hard for me to judge the 131st anymore. You know, it was Paul McHale and Jim and Karen Ritter. It's been Republican now, as you said, for some 20 years. Do you think that's because we haven't put up strong enough candidates? Or is that because the district isn't as liberal as it once was? What do you think is going on there? And how are you going to win this election?
So I think the candidates that we've put up are fairly strong, especially recently. Andy Lee ran for the seat last cycle, and he's a very strong candidate. He's a friend of mine. But the fact of the matter is, the Republicans outnumber the Democrats in the district by almost 3,000. Okay. Huh. We do have 8,000 independents as well.
So that's because of new subdivisions, I guess, right?
Correct. So you're fighting an uphill battle from the beginning. Mm. And as you mentioned before in our conversation, most people don't follow state politics. They follow national politics and they pick who they're going to vote for, Democrat, Republican, Trump or Biden, whatever. And that's the way they vote down the ticket, if they vote down the ticket. People don't realize how much our state government and our state officials affect our daily, everyday lives. Yeah. I would argue that our state government affects your everyday life more than what our federal government does.
Yeah, I agree. In fact, I have a tough question to ask you, and we're going to run out of time, so let me see if we can do this quickly. There are 48 police chiefs in the Lehigh Valley. There are 62 municipalities. There are 43 water and wastewater systems. You know, there are 17 school districts. And the state legislature presides over that mess, you know. So they say government is too costly, we're spending too much on taxes. And then they create this burdensome, overly governed local government. Do you have a 45-second answer to that challenge?
There's no reason why they can't work together, but our state needs to set up a system that allows it and can furnish it. So, for example, look at Hellertown, Lower Salkin. Hellertown is the donut hole, Lower Salkin circles around it.
Yep.
They work very well together in their public work. So one buys the dump truck, the other one buys a paver, so they don't have to both have that same cost.
That's cool.
There's no reason why they can't do that with regional policing to make sure everybody still gets the same amount of coverage, but we don't have the superstructure, the chiefs and the secretaries and centralized departments that are repetitive. Why can't we just keep building from a regional nature instead? So I think you're exactly right. Across the entire state, the Commonwealth is kind of a mess. We have 500 school districts in the state. We only have 67 counties, but 500 school districts. Yeah. There's no reason why they can't work together to formulate a better, more concise system that takes advantage of economies of scale.
Kevin Bronco, new to elected politics, and you're running for the 131st Legislative District in Pennsylvania. Thanks for being on the show tonight. Good luck to you on November 3rd. And that's all the time we've got. So thanks for sticking with us. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. Thanks again to Kevin Bronco. Have a good evening.